Welcome to Simple Life Radio, stories for the adventurous at heart. I'm your host today, Cynthia Fernandez, and we are going to focus on the real life experiences and perspectives from the folks on the Central Coast of California. This radio show was motivated by a love of storytelling, and a desire for a deeper connection between all life, one person at a time. Anyone who's hearing the sound of my voice has also heard of Apple Computer. Steve Jobs, co-founder of Apple, was named by Time Magazine's top 25 most influential people on the web back in 2008. Who was he really? What influenced him? What else was in play at the early stages of his life and our web history? Our guest today, Chrisanne Brennan, is a local author who just published a book titled The Bite in the Apple, a memoir of my life with Steve Jobs. Welcome, Chrisanne.
Thank you.
So in your book, Chrisanne, you write that you would never had considered writing a book if you hadn't been in dire straits. Have you found that some of our greatest accomplishments come wrapped in the most gruesome challenges?
Dire straits and gruesomes are perhaps not quite a full description of what I felt, though it was definitely in bad shape. I was ill. I didn't have any money to rent a place to live, or to buy food, or get medical attention. I was panicked, and I was not getting well. I slowed way down, and I took some stock. Up until getting ill, I was making my living from painting, but the fumes from the turpentine were either causing or exacerbating the condition I was in. So since I couldn't paint, I turned to thinking about writing my story. Through the years, I thought I had a good story, both as a woman in the current time we live and as someone who knew and loved Steve Jobs before Apple started. And so I took my opportunity. Once I committed to the full idea of a book, I had to teach myself to write. I could write basically well, but not like write a book. It gave me focus and purpose, and I was on the first 100 pages for the first 3 years. Then a colleague from my earlier working days in the late 90s made the first 70 pages into 5 chapters. And after seeing how that was done, I wrote the whole story, the whole rest of the book, in the second 3 years of writing the book.
The work you did to write the book, was it a cathartic experience?
I sort of reject the idea of cathartic, and it may be that I don't really know what it means, because a lot of people ask me that. And here's how I think of it. I think the cathartic part was the development and expansion of new gifts for me. I'm an artist, and I always like to work. Using words to put together what I had been through and what my awareness was a new idea, was a new capacity. And so and the revelations that came to me as I pieced the history together were so rich. Now, I see the idea of catharsis as a block being broken through. I think that's what it is. Mm. My block was the lack of skill in being able to articulate how difficult and tender the history with Steve was. And Sheryl Sandberg titled her book Lean In. But for me, in regard to Steve, it was a matter of pushing back, making more space for myself and defining things as I saw them. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know who your audience is, but I'm going to talk in these maybe unusual terms. But I think of it as a fifth chakra experience. Most women are cut off at the throat. We don't speak, mm-hmm. which is, it's the energetic, and the fifth chakra is the energetic center in the body for creativity via the word. So the catharsis was finding words to speak, to be kind, to tell the truth, and to tell a woman's story.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel somewhat like a spokesperson for Steve? I mean, he was a world-famous individual. I'm sure people didn't know him the way you did. But now that he's gone and you are touring your book and, you know, getting the word out, do you feel like people expect you to speak for him?
I I'm not a spokesperson for Steve, and I think that there were a lot of publishers who weren't interested in my book because I didn't have that kind of reportage.
So they were expecting you to be.
They wanted that.
Yeah.
I was a spokesperson for myself, but because of my proximity to Steve, or maybe just to say, because of the proximity to Steve, many people had written about me and gotten just a lot of stuff wrong. And so I wanted to tell my own story. Having said that, I did feel I had some unique insight into that man who is so remarkable. And I wanted to share it because I felt if I didn't share it, it was never going to get said.
Mm. So you were really holding it. And unless you shared it, it would be held eternally.
Yes. I was holding it for years till I got sick.
That happens sometimes, actually. Huh. So you speak about your mother's mental illness and how difficult it was to share that publicly at all. Have you actually healed that issue over the years? And if so, could you tell us how it was for you and such an important figure in your life to be unavailable to your support?
I don't know what it would have been like to have had support, but I'm basically a transformational person. And it's almost like I'm a one-show pony, too, because I wish I had a broader spectrum of gifts and tools in my toolbox for taking care of my life, but that one transformational vision is who I am, and it's how I understand the world, and it's how I take care of my life. And so when you have something like a mentally ill parent, you have to draw on your own resources and make them up. And that's what I did. And when I got older, I was curious with my mother. I mean, I think I was asking some of the right questions. I wanted to know how to put my arms and my mind and my heart around my mother and Steve's betrayals and become a bigger person. Both had kind of terrific childhood trauma, and I believed at the bottom of everything that if I could understand it, I would be okay, and then I would be okay with them.
Mm-hmm. So you were really efforting to grasp as much understanding behind their behaviors and motivations as you could to support yourself in the situation.
Yes, that's true. And and what was interesting is the situation with my mother was so difficult that I was constantly in reaction to it, And it was only when I was writing the chapter on my pregnancy with my daughter that I realized how my mother's mental illness was, in truth, one of the biggest heartbreaks of my life. Not for me, but I think for any child, that would be a heartbreak, just shattering heartbreak. And it didn't come until we were in our teenage years. My sisters and I were in our teenage years. But when I saw how, you know, there's just layers of how we feel about things. And in my book, I keep trying to get to the deepest layer because why else write it?
Right.
So when I recognized the grief I had, it was an amazing moment. No longer the teenager, but the deeply grieved child of a mentally ill parent.
Mm. Now, having lived through that experience, are you able to actually identify things you've learned from it that have helped you later in life?
Well, later in life. It's not that much later, but I do think that kind of epiphany changes your cells. You breathe differently. So I think probably, I mean, I'm so happy I've gotten a chance to know my real feelings. I feel bigger.
Well, you must. I mean, it's an acknowledgement that you have afforded yourself.
Yes, I did. I worked hard for it, but I did give it to myself.
And it sounds like from reading your book, we're here with Chris Ann Brennan, her book, The Bite in the Apple, A Memoir of My Life with Steve Jobs. And when I read your book, Chris Ann, it seemed as though you weren't afforded the ability to speak prior to writing this book. I don't know if that's my imagination.
I think it's the power of writing, to tell you the truth. I'm a painter. I did not think particularly in words. I did not take that time. I did not have that time. I've now thought how remarkable it would be if every high school student had to write a 100-page memoir as a part of graduation.
What a great idea. Because there is a reflection and a review that has you put things in perspective differently than when you just walk through your life every day.
Yeah, and then you move on from that because you put yourself together differently.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to go to break here in a minute. I want to just let everyone know that today's interview will be available via podcast to either listen now or download, and you can access that via the pilgrimsway.com website by clicking on Simple Life Radio tab. And Chris Ann Brennan's book, The Bite in the Apple, My Memoir of Life with Steve Jobs, will be available at pilgrimsway.com or in the store. She'll be there for a book signing on January 25th, beginning at 1 o'clock and until 3. So come on by if you have time in Carmel that day and meet her. She's a really interesting individual, and definitely pick up her book. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back with Chris Ann Brennan, author of The Bite in the Apple, A Memoir of My Life with Steve Jobs. Thanks for staying with us. Chris Ann, I read something in your book I just want to share, and this is a quote from Steve Jobs. "Do you not see how deep our history is?" And that was something that he said to you. What do you think he meant by that?
I think early on, Steve, as in later, he was ahead of me in certain ways. And I think when human beings have great shock in their childhood, it changes them, making us extraordinary. And Steve had that. He was adopted. And when his biological mother found out that he had been adopted to the Jobs, who were not her ideal for him, yeah, they fought for the first 6 months of his life. And Clara Jobs told me she was terrified to love her baby because she was afraid they were going to take him away from her. And I think when people have this kind of shock, they change. And I don't know who Steve would have been without that, but I considered him a mystic. And it's weird because later he became such a businessman. But I think that's why he's grabbed imagination for people, because he was both a mystic and a businessman. And a creator could be both a mystic and a businessman, and he was a creator. So, and at that time, what was that, 73, 74, we definitely had an idea of reincarnation. And the more I think about reincarnation, I think it seems like a really reasonable way that things might be working. I just felt at that time his love for me was huge, and I didn't really understand him or it. I mean, maybe that's true, but he was awake in unusual ways and could sense truth beyond the normal times and space, and we both felt a resonance with the idea of reincarnation. So speaking about the depth of our history, I felt he was speaking beyond normal perception.
Mm-hmm. So it really resonated for you as well. That you two had a history. You two had a connection or a link that was uncommon.
Only later. I really didn't understand it then, but because he understood it, I believed it.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. What correlations have you recognized, if any, between Steve and your own father?
Well, both were Pisces. the male journey is a very interesting thing, and I saw it close up in both of them. Both were men of their time, though they were different times. They both thought in similar ways as men of their time. That would be like a whole essay. I couldn't even go into that right now. But they were both sweet. My father was extremely talented. But it was my mother who shared more of what Steve had going. My mother was the brilliant, bold, experimental thinker in our family. And she was also clinically diagnosed with bipolar. And I've heard that a number of people have said that they suspected that Steve had was a little bipolar.
Interesting. Yeah. Now, you speak about the time when you first found out that you were pregnant with your daughter and Steve had told you that he would never help you. Having had such a deeply intimate relationship, even though it was off and on with Steve, how did you feel receiving that kind of a proclamation?
I just felt powerless and outraged and disoriented. By that time, I felt pretty disoriented around him. Apple had started to begin, and he became very competitive, and he didn't know how to talk to me and be at Apple at the same time.
So they were juxtaposed.
They were juxtaposed, and I felt like what I found myself doing when I wrote the book was to talk about that slide rule into the change, and the changes had been building more and more, and I do talk about that. I really didn't know what to think or feel. I was just so numb and in shock. And when I think about that question, I think, what can a young person know of such things? How could I imagine the future? I didn't have that yet. You only live through them, and then you find out what they are. And I did find out what they are. And in fact, I'd forgotten he'd said that until I wrote the book. And it was like, well, oh yeah, he fulfilled that promise. That rather terrible promise. I mean, he did and he didn't.
Well, you know, I wondered if you had thought at all about Steve's not having a relationship with his own birth father, and that perhaps that had an impact that might have influenced his relationship with his own daughter.
Oh. Well, he did have a relationship with her. In fact, he thought she was so cool that he wanted to own all of her. He was telling me she had more of his genes than my genes. But yeah, I think it was scrambled. And I think the relationship with his mothers, both, because he met both of, you know, he found his biological mother, and of course he grew up with Clara Jobs, was complex and not well settled. And so parenting in general was a confusion, I think. He didn't have that norm in him in the same way most people have.
Yeah, I mean, most of us have a relationship with our parents or caregivers, sometimes their grandparents adopted parents, right. And whatever the program is that we experience unconsciously, we have that installed, and then that's what we draw from when we're in that role. But what you're saying is that wasn't entirely intact, or it wasn't complete for him to draw from.
No, and I think maybe not complete for any of us to draw from. That's why we have to really take time and maybe work some things out, which is why I had that kids should maybe do their own memoirs.
It's a great idea. It's a really great idea. I find myself wanting to, for the audience, kind of summarize for anyone who hasn't read the book some high points of your story, because we're speaking about parts of your story, And for the listener, that's intriguing. But I'd love to give them the benefit of you guys were in high school, you knew each other as teenagers, and then as you continued on, both in your age and in your life stages, your relationship continued to get closer, and you were living together and spending lots of time together and sharing life's experiences. For example, when Steve went to India and spent time there and came back and shared that with you.
Mm-hmm.
And through all of the differences that each of you had in your life experience, from my perspective reading your book, there was sort of a dancing going on where you would share, recount, mirror back, share, recount, mirror back with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then it seemed as though when you became pregnant with Lisa, there was a very distinct shift. And what had been a dance previously was not available any longer. Is that accurate? Am I getting that right?
You've got it so right. I don't know quite what it means yet. I'm still distilling this down. I keep thinking if there's a second book, a couple of intuitives have told me there'll be a second book. I'm going to call it The Four Hands of the Clock.
Woo!
because there's so much to understand there. But in high school, when I was 17, I looked over one day at lunch and I saw Steve for the first time, never saw that guy before, and I was just slack-jawed. I thought he was so gorgeous. I just couldn't believe I'd never seen him. And then he started to walk away from the center of the campus, so I followed him, thinking I would introduce myself. But then I couldn't figure out what to say, and then he walked off the campus, and I just stood there watching him walk away. And then the next day, the same thing happened. And I thought, this time I'll know what to say. And I followed him out to the campus, and I didn't. And then the third day I tried it again. Then I realized I am incapable of introducing myself to this gorgeous guy. And so I gave up. And then he found me about 2 months later and introduced himself to me. And I can tell you, I did not tell anybody about him. I didn't even know anybody who knew him. He was from a different part of the school. And when he introduced himself, I was working on a film in the middle of the night with a small group of people. And he walked up out of the dark, and we talked a bit. And I just studied him. And he gave me a poem by Bob Dylan, and I didn't know if he had made that for me or if it was already in his pocket, but it was Sad Eye Lady of the Lowlands, and that was definitely who I was. If I was an archetype of coming out of Bob Dylan's songs, and we fell in love pretty quickly after that, and that summer we moved in together.
And then it just continued from there with different travels and experiences that Steve had going to India and...
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, there's a lot that happened. But yes, he went to India, and I was so impressed. This was 2 years later from that summer. But he went to India, and I was so impressed with what had happened to him, I wanted to go to India. So then I went to India.
Mm-hmm. And if I'm remembering this correctly, he also studied in Tassajara with a Zen master.
It's not quite accurate. Okay, so when he got back from India, there was a very unusual, extraordinary Zen master in Los Altos. And Steve was very weird when he got back from India. He was in a just kind of in an amazing state. He could hardly talk. He looked like a shaman, and he was so skinny so then I hadn't, you know, I had seen him up at the farm, but then down in Los Altos, I never ran into him. And then one day I found the Zendo and then found him there. And that Zen master absolutely fell in love with Steve and Steve with him. And so it was a great influence between the two of them.
And you had mentioned in your book the Zen master really saw a lot in Steve's future and likened him to, was it Saint Francis?
Yeah.
What was that about?
Maybe when people fall in love with each other, they make myths out of each other. But there was a little... It was unusual for me because I saw Steve as kind of not that nice to animals or plants. So this is where the a discontinuity started happening.
Yeah, I was thinking about that on the way over to the station, and I... oddly enough, just interviewed another individual who published a book about Junipero Serra. Junipero Serra, in an early part of his priesthood, was likened to Saint Francis. And I thought, between the two of these individuals, what is the parallel? Where's the common ground? And the common ground that came to me was that each of them really left the campus, so to speak. They really found their own individual, independent way in the world. I mean, Junipero Serra was credited with, you know, settling California, frankly, and went in a completely different direction than the typical church. And with Steve Jobs, all records show that he was so creative, he didn't follow. He really exited from what was traditionally done, and his innovation took him and the rest of us into a completely new direction.
When I think of Saint Francis, I think of a human being who deeply connected to nature. And I think of Steve, and I think he disconnected from nature.
Yeah, I remember the part in your book about him grabbing leaves and tearing them off while he was walking.
Yeah, it was a thing he did while he thought, but it was extremely insensitive. And it's not even that, it's that the computer is disconnected from nature, and it actually, I think people, I don't know, you know, I don't know that we've defined it yet, but I think it's sort of inharmonious with our biology. And I think it's hard, really hard on children. I think it's hard on people who work around computers all the time. To your point, if we're going to talk about somebody who's listening for another system of, another way to be, another understanding, another way to think, I think Steve did do that. I think many people, he was a part of a wave of people who did that. And also, if you recall in my book, I felt a lot of people at our school were doing that. Mm-hmm. We didn't have a choice. That was our time.
Right.
And sometimes I wonder about the IBM and the Lockheed fathers of all these kids that changed things. But it was also the East meets West. It was Ram Dass. So it was like, yeah, we were getting to another level of awareness. And there was the LSD experimentation. But I will say, I've talked to a number of people, and what I also hear is all the promise of that time was only partially realized. And people want to get back to the essence of what was in their heart and what they saw at that time that we only partially got to.
Interesting. Yeah, that's really well said. And it sounds, when I listen to you speaking about it, like you're revisiting that time and place.
But I also think, like, I watch some of the young yoga teachers now, and I think they are revisiting it. I think we went on this hiatus. Now the computer has connected the entire world, but there's something else that we slipped over.
Interesting.
And people are going back to it. The young people are going back to it. And the older people were going, yeah, we want it.
That's right. We want to go deeper.
Yeah, that's right.
We're here in studio with Chrisanne Brennan, local author of a book titled The Bite in the Apple, a memoir of my life with Steve Jobs. She will be in the bookstore at Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore and Secret Garden in downtown Carmel by the Sea on January 25th from 1 until 3, signing books. So come on by and say hello to her. We're going to come back in just a few minutes and find out what Chrisanne visions for the future. Stay with us.
We should get on because this is precious stuff.
Okay. We're back in studio with Chrisanne Brennan, author of The Bite in the Apple, a memoir of my life with Steve Jobs. And we've had a fabulous time so far talking about her life, early years in Steve Jobs' life, and their daughter together. Chrisanne, I notice in the postscript of your book something that was really, really significant to me when I read it. Steve was right when he said he would lose his humanity in the business world. And I find that fascinating. I mean, you've described him as being someone who early on in his life did a lot of traveling, both inwardly and outwardly in a spiritual pursuit of understanding the bigger picture, I'm certain. And yet his vision, not only as a creator of computers, seems to have given him the vision about his own life and how he would have to choose between humanities and the business world.
Soon after I met him, he started telling me that he knew he was really distracted and kind of torn up about it. And it was almost like he was talking to himself while I was there, that he knew he was going to lose his humanity in the business world. And my respect for him is profound because he had the courage to keep going. And he did not know what he was going to do at that point, of course. But he knew he had a destiny and that was going to be a part of it.
And so his creativity was all in, I guess you could say, in terms of business and computers, and the rest is history as far as that goes.
Well, his creativity was, when I met him, was Bob Dylan, was music, was psychology, he was the first person I met who figured out you could use food as a way of reaching higher states of consciousness. You can never look at a person without looking at the time period that person emerged through. And I think we've taken a new step, a new evolutionary step. But I think that time period was about power and power abuse. It was about humanity learning about power and power abuse. And so I feel like he fulfilled what he came to fulfill. So, I mean, I suffered a lot, and it seemed so frigging unnecessary. But anyway, so I think to your point, you were saying he was all of these things. And I want to say, I think we're all of these things. I accept that once again, because he had gone through such a trauma as a child. I think that kind of trauma is like it ignites a level of waking up consciously at a very young age. And so he was a mystic. He was kind of a seer. He was, and I don't think he asked for it. I think it just happened to him, and he was sort of witless fool dealing with it.
Mm. And so, speaking of Steve's trauma at a very young age, was there trauma for Lisa at a very young age?
Well, you know, I didn't have that trauma. I mean, I didn't. I had a huge family, and I was wanted and I was loved, and I was the first of the new generation in the Brennan family. And so I think I was able to protect her to some degree with that, though I was so young and by myself. I think Lisa's, her soul is intact in her personality, which I don't know that Steve had that stability.
I saw a picture of her on the internet at graduation. I guess she graduated Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
And next to Steve, and she's all grown up.
Yeah. Yeah, she did. She grew up. She's beautiful. She's 35 now, and she's just a remarkable human being by many people's standards.
That's fabulous.
Thank you.
So you, I'm sure, know the value of vision, given the book that you've just completed and published.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that you envision for our future?
Oh, humanity?
Yeah.
Oh, I think the next stages are that we integrate the spiritual or the etheric into the physical, mental, and emotional bodies. And I think basically we're not there yet. We've gotten ourselves to thinking in terms of the physical, the mental, and the emotional, because religion has kind of interfered with what spirituality is, even though it's helped, it's maybe interfered. But I think the four-body system is going to be integrated. And with that will come a higher integrity world. I know I'm full of great hope, but I think the people who hold great hope are the ones who are steering for the future.
I would tend to agree. And if you look at quantum physics and the influence that particles have on a larger organism, that would stand to reason to be
as positive as possible.
Simply powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chrisanne, I wanted to find out if you're willing to share with our Simple Life Radio audience what your vision of the future is for yourself.
Well, thank you. I am so looking forward to getting back to painting. Writing and painting take so much energy. I really couldn't do both at the same time.
And what kind of painting do you do?
Well, in the late 1990s, I met this enlightened teacher, and she connected me to a kind of work. My background is fine art, and I paint in oils. But what she helped me be able to do was to go into meditation with a person or a building or a land site and bring in information that I would then paint on canvas. And it would shift consciousness to a higher dimension and a more evolved dimension. And so every time I do a painting, I mean, I always wanted to travel all over in my life, but truly these paintings are just profound journeys. Some of them take me 2 and 3 years to do. And so I'm starting to feel that flow move back through me again, and I am so happy because it's for me it's easier than words. So,
yeah, that's amazing. So you more or less channel the building piece of land or person onto canvas.
I channel the higher potential, like the next step the person would get to.
Uh huh.
And then usually how that works is that there's just a simple formula in a certain way. One, I look for their core creativity. And I don't even ask that question. It's just what happens. But the other is that I believe what is happening is I take their karma and I help, due to the painting, their karma turns into not their headache anymore, but their dharma, which is their truth of their path of truth. And it's a creative path of purpose into fulfillment and resolution. So it flips difficulty into life.
Well, speaking for the rest of the population on the planet, we hope you get back to that work really soon.
Thank you.
And so because we're sponsored by a bookstore, Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore, we love to find out what your favorite book of all time would be. Or is, I should say.
Yeah. There are too many fabulous books. But if I were caught in a moment and had to just shout out one book, it would be 100 Years of Solitude. I think it's just the most heartbreaking human magical story. I like the aerial view of generations of time of a family story. And it begins in a jungle and it ends in the jungle after generations. And it's just a breathtaking work of beauty. Can I say that?
Yes, I love that you said that. What book are you reading now?
I'm a slow reader. And I'm writing so much, I'm kind of sick of words. but I usually have a pile by my bed. And right now, the pile I have is Blasphemy by Sherman Alexie. I have The Alchemy of the Nine Dimensions by Barbara Hanclow. I always have Rumi. And I have Creating a World Without Poverty by Muhammad Yunus.
Well, that's
and I
very
pick
much,
pieces out of
yeah,
them.
Yeah, that sounds like the four dimensions you were speaking about earlier.
Right.
Well, it's been a distinct pleasure to have you here on the show, and I personally applaud you for finding your voice and your courage to put in print your perspective on your life and someone who a lot of people really feel some sense of ownership to, it seems.
Yeah.
And I just want to give you every opportunity, if there's any message of your own that you'd like to share before we run out of time, I certainly want to give you the time and space to do that.
Well, I will say this. I didn't know how to write this book. I felt I needed a PhD to write it, and I didn't have a PhD. I didn't know conventions about writing about such a thing. So I thought it came to me, if I steered between kindness and truth, if I just hit the middle of kindness and truth, that was going to make what I had to say worth writing and worth reading. And the other thing I knew all the way through vaguely as I stumbled, because it was a really rough history, was that we know everything is love. And so I was trying to find where I could love beyond all the disregard I felt I received. And I'm still working on that, but I'm really, you know, grabbing... I'm on the cliff. I'm sitting solid. So
I think it's fabulous, and I consider you an inspiration to many other women who perhaps haven't been acknowledged or appreciated or supported in their life's journeys with their partners.
Thank you. It's nice to hear you say that.
Yeah. So thank you so much for being our guest on Simple Life.
Thank you.
Okay. And again, to our listeners, we will have Chrisanne Brennan, local author of book titled The Bite in the Apple, A Memoir of My Life with Steve Jobs, at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore in Secret Garden. She'll be there Saturday, January 25th, from 1 until 3 in the afternoon, signing books and meeting people. Please stop by and be our guest. We'd love to see you. Give us a call at the store if you need more information. Our number, 831-624-4955. I'll be here with you again next week, and our guest next week is Stuart Perrin, author of a book titled Little Sisters, which is about human trafficking, a very important message and information to share with all of you. So I'll look forward to having time with you again. Take care.